All right now.
Yeah.
So I got to repeat that, or did you get that?
I was saying you went from when you went to see
him. I went over to see him, and I just went over there. Like, and I went in the door. He said, "You're coming." She has sort of guttural rings, you know, like the Swiss he was. So he plunks down £7.10 on the table. So he said, "What you look at?" So I said, I was struck down. He said, before I could say anything, he said, he said, "You want to work?" He said, "You work for me next week?" He said, "No, you work," he said, "if you ain't got no money to buy food." He said, "You ain't no good to me," he said, "you can't work because you ain't had no food." "I've got a lecture," he said, "you want money to buy food?" You know? So I was struck down. I'd never heard of such a thing. You know, so I took a minute, sort of staggered out of there. But this case, he said he's wrong and he wanted it better again. But I got on remarkably well with him, but he was a very austere sort of person. But if you did your work, you know, I got on with him. I tell you, I done my work, and I tell you how I used to watch. Well, the bloke said to me, the other bloke, sort of a clerk of the works or whatever he was, he was some sort of, he had a bit of authority anyway. So he said to me, "He'd only been 2 or 3 days on the bags." He said, "Used to eat." I said, "Well," I said, "I've been in place, it works 128 and 138 in the shade." I said, "I expect that's eat." "What do you mean, Mr. Fern?" He said, "Well, I want you to come and work in the foundry, see?" Alright, so I started in a foundry. Now my job was to stand up the side of a bloke working a coupel, you see, and as he let the metal run off, you just have a channel, and just pull it out and let it run off, like, you know, say a pipe leak, well, not a pipe, but like a funnel, like a gutter, say, coming out, like a channel. My job was to stand in the tap running continuously in a great big tank in front of the furnace, and the metal used to run into this tank, but if it wasn't stirred it would lump up, or it would get so hot that it'd explode. This is where all the trouble come from, burnt and scalds and all sorts of things, see? And of course the bloke I had there, he kept me out of an hour and a half to get his out, 2 hours or something, slogging away at this lot, and the sweat used to run off of me, and it's that paddle by my foot. We had wooden sabots clogs in, and they were always being renewed because the bars and the stuff was heavy, which it carried. And although we used to have a brass band round, or won't move, like round the foot front, like here, it used to break. And the crews, the wood sabots, they were snap wood, they were Dutch shoes like. And you'd have to get another pair. Anyway, I suffered this year, and there's a load of frogs in doing it. And they all went back to France because they couldn't get any money or extra money or something. Anyway, somehow or other, whatever happened, I don't know. So, Georgie Buer said to me, he said, "You do that." I could, I'd watch everything that happened, see? Of course I could do it. So I started to do it. Well, the procedure was, you load your furnace up, your coupe, it's a great big bowl, it holds about a ton. Then we refine a ton of silver. It used to come in from straight settlements, and you had Chinese dollars coming in, but Lord knows how long. See, then the gold used to come in on Thursdays from the Guinea coast or wherever it was, America and New Guinea, see, or South Africa. See, when the ships used to come, we used to watch the pay for the ships. The ships used to bring in dockets so and so. That's stuff because you used to be all over the world, Rothschild, you know, world financing. And buy the stuff everywhere. Stuff out of jeweler shops, you know, when the Queen cleaned her back room out, like, of all the stuff they'd had given when they'd been mounting around laying bricks with silver trowels. You know, you used to buy all this junk and invest a lot in here, and you used to get it to melt down on smaller piles than this. Bar stuff, coins mostly, that used to go into the coupels. So of course you load it up, you turn it on. Now the flame pressure was used to have what they call air and oil. And they supply, the flame you supply over the top and beat down the heat onto the coin, see? Like a rounded top affair it was. About chest, not quite chest high, well about say stomach or whatever, you know, out of your belt line. And it used to be blocked up in the front like that. Say that's the cute pill. You'd be blocked like that in the front and have a channel like that. See, it's all part of that, but that was that. And when you run off, you scratch that out and it used to run and go into the tank. See? So of course the procedure was though, at the back you had an air pipe. Well from that there was a blower, used to blow onto the top of the metal, keep it revolving as it was melting, see? And as it, of course it had a lot of alloys in it, all sorts of muck in it, well there was a point in them. And that was all churning away all the time, so you leave it say for an hour and a half or whatever it may be. See, and then you run some off, and you still had got enough, so you block it up again, then let it have a bit more blow. Well, the running off procedure was that you scratched it and pulled out the front, and your mate working with you, a great big long iron bar, with a piece of putty bonite on the top of it. So when I said, block up, he put it on there and pat it down and stop the flow from stuff coming out of the furnace or from the cupel from running into the tank. When it was finished, you first of all start to run. See, you had no idea it was. You get the top layer of scum off, loads of stone scumming or anything in the front. You used to run through the channel and into the tank. See, well then. As it's running, you're watching it, and you've got your mate's got his thing to block up, see? And all of a sudden, you see right in the middle, there's a little silver. It's like a moon coming through on a dark night. It's different to all the other, and it opens out like if you chuck a brick into a pond, and the circles gradually widen and widen and widen until they get to the edge. Well, now if you're running silver, unless you block it up quick. See? Well, because he was to plug it up quick, and now it's ready for casting. So, line the bars up and paint them up with lamp black. Line the moulds up, which have angles on them, and paint them with black. Well, these bars used to weigh 1,000 ounces. Well, you work it out how much weight there is in one. And now you've got to get it out. Well, you've got a canvas sleeve. Asbestos rather, probe your hand, well sunk into water, dip it soaking wet, you know, in your other arm, and you get hold of your spoon and you've got to dip it in and press it out and cast it into the moulds on the ground. See? But when you first start, you carry it. See? You've got to stagger him round with it. But when you get the neck of it, you're swinging and you're accurate as bird o'clock. You know, you dig out, swing it round and down and back again, because you're only capable of doing so much. Everybody has to come and help each other when they cast it out. When the last drop's out, of course, that's it. It's bucked up and it's left for a while. You turn the burners down because you've got to put it up again. And that is then taken over to the hot water tank. It's their bars about... well, 3/4 of the way up from the bottom, in a great long tank, you know, something like Oars tall, I mean, not so big, a bit deeper. And I was on the ground, and with a pair of tongs, you know, you had to pick this bar up, it was 1,000 ounces, you know, over half an hour, pick it up, and got my arms like there, as I told you, when I went on the buses. Like I said to me, at the corner of by younger Martin, he said, I was on the trolley buses first, said he used to stand up, get round that corner. He said, you must be strong in the arms, instead of sit there and drag it round like you did. And that's where I got it from there. not only that, my physical condition. And yeah, pick it up with a pair of tongs and carry, get the, knock them out first, turn them on over, and of course they drop that because the lamp black prevented it from sticking to the mould, see? And then you've got the tongs and carry it over the tank and lifting it up, be this side, and just put it on the bars in the tank, see, it's cold water and the tap was running. Of course, I was willing to pick them out anyhow once it was finished, because the water started to boil. And then, of course, the thing then after that was, Dave used to take them down, somebody used to take them down to the assays and they get them assayed. Well, you could never get 100%, as you might know, because you could get low, well, you could get 8.5 or 9, something like that, by some miracle, because the minute you put that iron spoon in, so the stuff come over that straight into the metal. And not only that, that used to last about 2 or 3 minutes. Can you imagine the money they must have spent there? Those ladles alone cost 37 shillings and sixpence, and that was a lot of money then, when the average wage outside was £2 a week. There's a week's wages there. You just get a hole in it. So, of course, you dump that and get another one. You couldn't hang about swinging out because it doesn't retain its heat, silver. And as you come out, before you reach the pot, if you're not moving, it'll turn into a blooming ice cream. Exactly. See, so you're carrying dead weight. Anyway, of course, when you get the nag of it, you manage all that and get it out, and just you feel the hour, you have to get it on again. But I got it down such a fine art that I never had my mate struggling up the ever iron or stirring up no bleeding tanks. See, so I sort myself, we fill it up, and I ain't got the bits to make it up yet. And anyway, we put it in the comb, we put the burners on, and we melt it down, we get it settled down, all that, get the blow and everything going, and then sit down and talk. And when I want to run, all I used to say to my mate, now get the thing with me, Bob. The bars and stick a bit up and go stand over near the door. I won't have him doing no stirrings, see, while I'm running off. See, when you take a half hour out, standing there, sweat pouring out, you get bleeding, burnt and all. So I say, you go stand over near the door. So they all lose all their out, all the others, when they see my mate go over the door. Surf is running off. Well, now they used to scratch a bit out, I used to pull the bleeding light out. Didn't this come out like Niagara Falls? See? And I'm watching it from the door, and as I can see, it's getting near the end of that bleeding rush. So we should chase over and block it up. Well, in about 2 or 3 minutes, we'd done the job and took someone and scraped the screen for bleeding 3/4 of an hour before we stopped there trying to stir the tank up. It always, of course, many times. It's come out so fast, when nobody's stirring it, you go crash up in the bleak there went the tank, it come down bone dry, because the job's finished. It's all there, there's no name out of it. So it's come back, I've got to run it all faster than what they did. So anyway, that's alright, I'm taking notice of that. We had a bloke strong in the arm, thick in the head, Wilkins his name was, and he was one of them sort of blokes, you know. Oh, you know, proper old country style. Well, they all retired down the tree. All the old times that lost the heart, see, as a rule. They go down the tree and neck as a footman or gateman, where he is. And I know he didn't like me because he couldn't do the job at bleeding good as I could. Although he was the foreman. I'll tell you about this, though. Well, anyway, I stopped on the kill. And then you had to... Well, while I was on the QPELs, they come out and said that the assays wasn't high enough, and they wanted to take a dip. Now, a dip would be about a 10-ounce bar, a little tiny one, you know, like a bar of chocolate. And before you could cast your phone, it's that you used to go down to the assayer, and he'd assay and see what it was. And if he said it was okay, like 9, where it might be, so they come bring it back, say, well, it's all right, we'll pass you out now, see. So, of course, you cast. Well, anyway, Wilkins, they had their mother-in-law make a bleating tea and their brother-in-law's all over the show. It's rather family quick like with the foremans, see? Of course, I know none of them didn't bleat like me, and I didn't like them much either. So, of course, he starts his old capers. I know exactly, I said, old Harris, a mate of mine, has been running around. As a matter of fact, do you remember him coming down talking to you one day about going to school, son? He was saying, he came from Woodford. Him and his wife came in. Now, that was a bloke, mate of mine, in there, because we earned so much money, Jim, that we worked so many hours that we could afford to buy the best, but we couldn't eat it. We just didn't want it. All we wanted was to sleep, tired. So anyway, I said to old Bill, I said, I'm going to take my ride in. I bet he says it ain't no good, I said, but I'm going to fix him tonight. I said, I've had enough of him. He'd take a dip round, he'd say, he'd look at it. See, before I sent it round yesterday, he said, well, no, he said, that's... He said, it wants about another half-hour's blow. The reason was that his son-in-law, doing the same job as us, he used to struggle all the bleed night long and start to get his furnace out when it's time to go home. And you've got to help him to cast it. So we never used to get out on time with him. See? And he didn't want nobody to cast out before he got out, so he used to hang everybody else out as long as he could, the foreman did. So his son-in-law hadn't cast. So I said, well, I'll cook his goose tonight. I said, oh, Bill Harris. So I did that two dips. One I went behind a water tank, and the other one I was going to take round to him, see? Now, they're identical twins. They both come out at the same time, so they must be the same. I went round in. I knew what he was going to say. He said, it wants another half hour, he said, or so. So I just tossed it in the furnace, and... Well, I went, I suppose I had a grin on my clock. He said, he didn't know, I forget what he said. He said something anyway. But anyway, back I'll come and I'll sat on my horse. Didn't do anything for about half an hour. And then I picked this one out in the back of the tank and I said, oh, Bill, I bet he says this is all right because Charlie Grungo, the other coon, Longfellow's name was, or Shortfellow. He was struggling, he was getting near the end when he could cast it, you see. So I took it round, he said, oh yes, he said. He said, that's much better, and that's a bleeding same one. So he said, yes, he said, that's all right, he said. So he must have seen a sort of grin away at me clock. He said, this ain't the same one, he said, is it? What you showed me before. I said, no, it's his bleeding twin brother. And I meant it, but he didn't think I did. So, of course, I come away from here, I was happy before. But 3 days later, he finds out, someone told him. So he came round, he said, that was a bleeding fine trick he paid on me the other night, wasn't it? The other day. So I said, well, don't come here. I said, you ain't got no bleak mug here. I said, you don't want me to cast my furnace before your beloved. I said, come and tell me. I said, I won't cast it. I said, I'll hang on. I said, as long as you want to hang on. But don't come and tell me, it ain't no good, I said. Oh, boy, I said, I'll chuck you on that bleeding fire. And he said, I'll bleed you what? He said, no, he walked off. So anyway, me and George, he worked the same boundaries I did, my brother, because he's dead now, you remember him now, don't you? And they put us on the oven. Well, the oven is it's like a great big long oval shaped affair. And they used to make what they call a bluestone. And they used to tip coins into a great big tank about half the size of a swimming bowl. And they used to row up and down with these coins in them. And after a while, they'd run all the liquid up the top. And it was a little lump of glass it was. If you'd know anything about chemistry, you'd know what I'm talking about. But I don't know if you do or not. But anyway, they used to run all this off and leave a lot of stuff all white. Like a lot of... white half stone, what they used to have years ago, or limestone if you like, lime, and it was powdery stuff. Well, it's all wet, it's got to be melted down. It's silver, pure silver that was. So they scoop it up with wooden spats and that, and put it through a press and bring it out like long loaves, you know. And then it had to go in the oven. Of course, the heat of the oven would dry it out, sufficient syrup, he said, put it into a coupel or into small round pots. So these pots were all about 200 or 300 weight, something like that, a couple of 100 weight. Most of them were used for all the old trash, right? You know, some was winning cups and all that, but other times they was used for silver and all sorts of things. Depends, so many bars in there. But anyway, to get back to this, that was brought round, oh, it had been pressed, brought round to us on the oven. So we had to put it in the oven and get the burners going and lock the doors in the front, right? And after a while, we'll have a look now and again, see if it's getting dry. After it's dry, we start to get it out and stack it so that anybody wanted it. It was hard now, brick hard it was, but it was silver, but it was white. And just like white hardstone, I tell you. And, well, same colour as that thing on the ball there, the radiator. And it'd be like powdery until it was pressed into the compress. And oh, we baked it hard. They come and get it and use it on the coupels. There was doing the coupels, see. Well, me and George used to do the splitting job in our pocket. They got a bright idea, it was easier job for their son-in-laws and that to do, see, so they give us a chuck. One night he said, I think I'll give you a change. We knew what was coming, we chucked all this, we got it just right. And, of course, during the process of all this, I've got to tell you, which I forgot, that Mr. Bowes died, see. And I had a bloke come out the tanks, you know as much about Silvery Pine as that bookcase. I mean, just because he was a tank commander, some ex-bleeding general, I think he was. And then another bloke, he's backer up, I was a naval officer, Lieutenant somebody or other he was. Anyway, never bleeding worried me. When I was there, and I used to sit on the bank when my coupel was going, and when Bowes used to come, he said, you know, people, the way of people, let's get up and run. Not me, I sat there. So he'd come up and he would say to me, how's it going? Oh, I said, all right, sir. I said, you know, a little bit more of it. I said, he knew I could do the job. I said, he wouldn't give it to me in the first place. See? And I wasn't going to run away. What have I got to run away for? Well, my job, you have to give it its time to melt like you do everything else. Of course, when he'd gone, he'd say, what'd he say? I said, he said he wanted to get some more brooms. He said, he wanted to just run about hunting for bleeding brooms when he comes up here, make out you're working. What a bleeding child. Yeah. But anyway, unfortunately, he died. Well, George is a mathematician, because he went to grammar school, the same place that you went to. So, during the thing we built, they wanted a staircase shifted from one side of the building to another. And they got all sorts of ideas and lump in there, lump out, and this lump out. He said, I'll shift it. So he went and worked with the old measurements to different places. And they shifted the whole thing in one lump. It was a steel staircase. Already done with it, you know, he got the measurements to it. And they was astounded. You know, he said, well, it's all right when you know how, he said, isn't it? But he had another one, he was the same as me, the proper believing rebel, he thought anybody was coming in. But anyway, on this oven business, we thought they were going to give us a chuck. We thought, well, we'll put it in the oven tonight, George, eh? Said, yeah, we fix this silicone open and bleeding dover. So when we went in the next day, the night's bloke, his brother-in-law, whoever, had stopped to do a bit of overtime, I was there, because we changed round by this. I'll tell you about a change in a minute. But he'd done a 3-hour shift then. So we were doing the 12 hours and 12 hours on. They made a 3-hour shift of a day off, and we got the fleet day off. Me and George. Anyway, we fixed the door so they couldn't get the oven open. Because when we went in the following morning, they couldn't get the oven, and the bleed started melted inside the oven. It all ran out of burner holes and down the staunchions that supported the oven. Was all round here cakes, they'd get pom-poms and chop it up all over the bleeding floor. It was iron floor. So he said, so we couldn't get the oven open last night. So George said, well, I'm about there. He said, we could all open. Could we, John? Of course we could, I said. We used to do it all right. I said, there was no trouble about getting the oven open doors, was there? No, George said, it wasn't. Anyway, why? we got the job back again. Well, after a while, we went back on a few pals, you see. And it come out that the one who cast the ISSA would get £7.10 as a bonus, see. So I said to the head, I said, you know what, I said, they're trying to hurry us up. Which is all they believe we was doing, trying to chase us. So I said, tell you what we do, I said, I ain't saying this, I said, because nobody don't know, I said, but I can hold me own with any use, I said, and I can get the £7.10, I said, just the same as maybe you can, and George. I said, but they're trying to hurry us up. I said, so what we got to do? I said, don't matter who gets the £7.10, we'll divide it out amongst us. See? So which we did, until somebody split on us and they stopped it all together. So of course, they done away with £7.10. And do you know the foreman? He went up onto a sort of iron staging right up in the area, and somehow he touched one of the live wires, it melted his buckle and everything, chucking all the top. He landed on the iron floor and he wasn't hurt. Wilkins, that was his name. But anyway, to get back to all this, he put us back on the Q-Pels. And then finally he decided to put us on a small pot, and he put me in charge of them, see. Well, they all went to lunch, and my job was supposed to be to stay up there and keep the burners and everything going as they should be, see, because with these, one time they used to have a coke fire, but when they got the oil and oil on, it was great for it, was no slogging. See, well, the burners was underneath, and you just turned them up according to how you wanted them, like so you melted the stuff. And of course that's why I had to maintain the eating of them. There was about half a dozen, I suppose, of these, while they went all to lunch. Well, something he said one night about coming or other, it went on, wasn't hurry enough, it wasn't quick enough for him. See? Well, you can adjust the burners for the heat you wanted, see, by just fiddling around, see? Well, I know how to fiddle them around as good as anybody. So when he wasn't getting enough, I thought, well, are you talking about me? I said, oh, that the burners are not adjusted. He said, well, he said, they're not, he said. So I said, well, you know what you're doing. It's someone else, can't you? He said, well, I want you to do it. See? Well, of course, the idea was you put two or three bars into the, right around copper, more than anything else. Made of steel, whatever it was. And with brickwork inside, or bone-like covering inside, so you'd be melted still. You put two or three bars in, and then you cooked them up, and then you ladled it out, you know, same as you did the other stuff. See, but there was no refining work in here, because they was already been refined, the bars, and you made whatever they wanted. I mean, most of the bars went into the Royal Mint, and other people, they used to buy them, or them like 10-ounce, bars, you used to cast that 10-ounce like jewellers bars, what they did around jewellery with. Well, they make those sort of bars, about 10-ounce like bars of chocolates, I told you. You just send them out. You know, just send out platinum and gold and all that on a flat truck. And just with a tall pauline sheet over. No gold, no nothing. Nobody suspected what was under there. You wouldn't think it, but gold and platinum. Platinum is sent out in jam jars. You wouldn't think that. That's what was underneath there was a fortune. There was no angled ups and nothing like that. But that's, they got away with all that. So anyway, to cut that bit of a story short, when they went there, was it? He tried to bleed and chase us again. So he said, there wouldn't be no extra money, no how you done. So I fiddle around with the burners and so there's plenty of punch, plenty of fire and all that, but no punch behind it. See, no bleeding there, felt it, see? Turn the air down a bit, well, you've got a great big flame and it's just going to burn everybody to death. And you ain't got enough punch behind to melt the bleeding stuff, see? So, of course, I fixed all these. So, of course, come the bleeding morning, they couldn't get them out because they wasn't melted enough, see? Had some idea, he didn't actually accuse me, he had some idea. So he shoved me back on the thingy bobs again. On the Q 2 pounds. And after that, we had that Disabalon come back, with new thing we bought, and they was going to build some vaults to take some of the work we were doing and take some of the stuff that was coming in. See, so they started building new vaults. Well, we was a bit slack at that particular time, and we had to help, like, with Barra, and the sacks of coins put them on, like, as they come in, like, unload all the lorries. And well, them down under these vaults, see? Well, the bleeding tank commander and these 80 camp, or 80 corps, they used to stand and watch, see? So the sailor comes up to me, he says, said, you can go quicker than that, he said. I said, yeah, I said, I can bleed more on. I said, but I ain't going to. How about that? So he said, well, all the others, he said, are hurrying up. I said, well, I ain't going to bleed and hurry up. I said, I don't get paid for hurrying up. I said, I'm doing more. I couldn't tell me anybody's taking any more than I am. So he couldn't answer that. I said, we're going to better go and report to the captain. I said, what I told you. So he said, of course he do. I know he didn't like me in the first place, this bleeding coon. So they saved it up for me, see, because when they changed over now, oh no, me and George had a battle first. We had nowhere to go for our grub, you know, we was just, same as I'd had the same thing down the other hockey where I went and found me. I'd sit on the floor and have a grub, well, where you could get. So I said, well, we want a place where we can, oh no, they had a little tiny toffee apple room. And they said, well, one of the blokes, the two brothers here, they were, he used to operate a beer barrel. We'd have a drop of beer, like, five, but all of them. So me and Joe decided we wanted a day open. We wanted somewhere where we could sit properly and have a grub. So over the office we go. And, so who's going first? I said, we don't make no difference. I said, does it? So George said, no, he said, I'll go first, he said. So in he goes, I can hear him land all down in here. You know, the bloke's saying, yeah, I think that's reasonable. George saying, like, as you're saying, I know bleak well is. He said, otherwise I won't be saying it, would I? You know, that's the sort of advice you get off him. There's no one to kill you stone dead, like with the arms, if you try to get funny with it. See? Anyway, after he said his say, I said, well, it's your turn now. I said, now, I said, I don't have to go. I said, he said it all. I said, what I was going to say, I said, it's the same as he said, so I won't go in there and repeat it. So we've got a day off, one day a week, and we've got a decent place we're going to have our grub and drink our beer. So this is all. And then they started to change over onto electric. See, furnaces were done away with, like, in the pounded, like, air and oil. It was all literally melted and all the silver was done out in grains, and it was, you know, all the drains round the Rob Charles was bucked up with silver, half of them. So, of course, that's before they got their own drainage system and kept the stuff into their own place. I mean, there were spoons coated up with silver, all the walls had it on, all on the floor, there was a fortune hanging round. So I say, people think you've got to get a pair of specs to go there. But it was by the ton, the silver. Gold's a different thing. They brought me in a load of stuff, like gold, you refine it. Well, you don't refine it, you melt it, it's already been refined, see? Somebody else has done it. And you just put it in there, and say somebody wants, well, so many bars of this, that, and the other. You just melt it down and just cast them out, stick them in a tank, and let them cool off on the water, and that was it. So anyway, they had all this electric stuff come in there, and well, I see when he come around, he says he wanted to see me, and I know he wanted to see me. I was the first there, but when I went in, he said, "I'm sorry," he said. I said, "Yeah," I said, "I don't see that." I said, "Blake, he's flooded out with tears." I knew Blake, well, what are you going to say? I thought, "Well, I'll say it before you do." See, but I know he didn't like me anyway. This thing we bought, this general. I said, yeah, I can see. I said, the place is flooded out with tears. So I said, well, tell me then. I said, you're going to say that you're sorry and all that. I said, but I know you ain't sorry anyway. and tell me, because I've got pull out, they call it. Well, 2 or 3 weeks afterwards, Harris comes out to me and says, Mr. Arntwine, that was the bloke who ran the gap as a role, he said, he wants to see you. So I said, I don't want to see him. He said, well, he wants to see you about a job. I said, well, I don't want to see him about no job. I said, I'm fed up with him. Anyway, they wrote me a letter. But when he came out of there, Jim, like, well, if you've got a good reference, which I had, they give you a letter stating so, but they won't give anybody a verbal, you know, that you can't phone through. So anyway, I went up there just in case to see him, and he said, I've got a job for you, sir. He said, so I said, what job's that? So back on your own job, he said. Well, they had a rule up there that once you broke your service, you started as a newcomer, see? So I said, well, back on my own job. I said, on my own money then, on my own money. He said, unfortunately, he said, we've got a rule. I said, yeah, and I know the rule, I said. But if I'm going to start as a new man, I said, I want a broom. He said, I want to sweep up. I said, that's what new men do. I said, they don't think about refining gold or silver, do they? See? So if I'm going to start as a new man, I said, I want a broom. So I said, well, I said, no, he said, well, you want to get back on your old job. I said, well, can't be done. So I come out of there. But there's something else I wanted to tell you happened while I was in there. Oh, there was a little place where they had 3 furnaces, see? Now, Mr. Georgie at BOS was there. He was pleased to bleep and punch over this. And it happened while the Swiss bloke was there. They said, bring in all the slag. But sometimes you cast a bar, you've got slags and stuff, and bits of silver and all the stuff stuck on everywhere, with other sorts of muck fixed in it, and sulphur. See, the idea was to stack the furnace up as high as you could get it, with this old muck in it, you know, metal handles and all sorts of things, and get all that out, supposed to get all that out. And what's left is silver. There wasn't much left. See, well, you're supposed to put 5 scoopfuls in, and then give it an half hour. So he thought about air, bleeding, right, air racing. What did he? Put 4 scoopfuls in and let the burns up as high as you can get them. Melt this lot down. Of course, thought it's the bulk of a load of rubbish and all sorts of bleeding stuff. And what would be left with a little bit of silver zinc sink in the bottom of the scoopel. So he let it keep stacking up about every half hour, see? So, put so many in. You had to put so many in, 5 scoopfuls. So you didn't know that going down, you had another 5 scoopfuls, this old muck. So my idea, and you got to put chalks on the door, like a 5-bar gate, weren't they, people put. As you done one lot, see? Oh, I've got a better bleeding idea than this, chasing around every bleeding knot, I'll sweat myself to death. So I stuffed it up as hard as I could get it. You know, I couldn't, well, I ran in the door to finish. So I shut the bleeding door and fixed it, and I put on the door so-and-so, see? I filled the door out with bleeding chalks, 5-bar gates, in the morning. When he came round for it, and I cast it out, a bar of silver about as thick as that, you know, from the mould was about that length, about that width. Down the bottom, I said, hey, what, they couldn't get in the safe quick enough. So I saved all this stuff. So they want to know how I'd done it. I said, well, I'll tell you what, I said, give me the open strength and put in the chalk. I said, I'll show you how to do this job. That was about it. I'm part of it. Yeah, well, I wasn't going to run about and sweat to death. So I went off because the sweat is a pour out of me, out of my head and out of my eyes. And I was standing in it. Yeah, can we see up and start and plenty of shows? A thing we bother tell you.
What was the year?
I got caught at this job, eh?
What was the year you left then?
They put me off because they, when they got this.
What year was it? When were
they? Well, I was in the mint when they met with the other lot. when they brought it forward, I think 1933 or 1934, something like that, 1935, I'm not sure about this, the dates. But anyway, also, Jim, while I was there, Mr. Belted, the under manager, he come up to me and he said, oh no, I've been in the mint. That's right.
So what happened then? Did you then go from there to the mint?
Yes, yes. But while I was in there, the Belted, the under manager, come up. Of course, the other gatters was. And he said, we're having an extension built on the back, you know, he said, and... No, I went back in there, that's right. And he said, since I've been in the mint, he said, I'm going to put you in charge.
Sorry, when was this?
This is 1934, 35, something like this. Anyway, I said to the bloke...
You're saying you went back to Rothschild?
Yeah. And, yes, I'm missing it out. I went into the mint, got a job in the mint, and the pay was 2 guineas a week. Mind you. Well, I was on the lay yet ago. Oh, well, they stopped your money. So I went. And when you go in there, you have to see it, the master. Well, it was so strict in there, nobody talked to anybody else. Well, there's a bloke in there, sergeant in the place in my regiment. And I would say hello to him, and he wouldn't answer. Just turn away, you know, they think you're a catch of talking there. You know. Anyway, they put me on making skillet bars. Well, skillet bars is, you've got a lot of moulds and they're all upright and they're all on like a trolley. Know what I mean? And then you have to melt and stuff come over the top and you have to tip it in so you fill it up. It's like a lot of slots, long slots, Jim, with a bottom and two sides. And you put them in. And when it gets cold, you have to lever the bars over with a lever and then with a pair of tongs pull out the skillet bars. Well, they were long about something like the metalwork of that chair, and they were long and about that width and about that thick. See? Well, Belcher said to me, he said, I'll put you in charge, he said, when we get it done, he said, because you're used to it, he said, you've done them in a minute. So when I got back again, see, someone said something, George got me back again, or an argument. Anyway, when it was nearly built, he had a chance to say, he come up to me and he said, I'm sorry, John, he said, but I can't do what I want to do. He said, I can't put you in charge. So I said, don't say no more. Mr. Bell, he was a decent bloke. I wasn't prepared to rhyme him over it. So I don't say it no more, Mr. Belcher, I said, because I know somebody's been to work, I said. And they've been telling people this, that and the other, and you've had a bit of pressure, so I won't say anymore about it, which he had. See? I put one in Sweden already in charge, but he hadn't been in there. And they got about it, so anyway, I let them get on with it. But I used to have Lion on Anthony Rothschild, they come around, they have a box of fags under their arm. Say, come on, John. Yes. So like that. Good morning, sir. Something I might say, something I wouldn't, or didn't. And I'd bring out a fag, have a smoke, and I'd say, well, how's this so-and-so? Well, it's doing all right, or we're doing all wrong, what was that? You can tell them. The stay was all right, it wasn't them, it was the Crabs who worked under them, see? It wasn't the Rothschild, because they had a place over at Newcourt. And I tried to get a job when they go somewhere for a job and they had their office there, but they couldn't help me there, they didn't take one from there apparently. But so I didn't get that job, got done out of that, and of course I left it and that was it. I said, well, that'll put you all, but when we get the stuff going up in there, they'll send me, but so I wouldn't save yourself a trouble, so I don't want to come back here anymore. They split the wages down, so their money didn't run out from £7 10 for a 12-hour shift. They shifted it down to, you got about £2 10 a week. So I said, well, that ain't no good to me, because when I was in the mint, I'd been in there about 3 weeks, and pay me fair out of 2 guineas a week, and expect you to come up there in a pinstripe suit and a bowler hat, something in the city. I said, I was something, but I don't know what it was. I said, I can't manage you, I said to the master. I said, oh, I'll pay my fare. I said, I've got nothing left. I said, I've got to work with two children indoors. He said, well, I'm forcibly missing the service. He said, I don't make the wages. He said, the government does that. We said, do. Civil servants, see. I said, well, it's no good to me. I said, he said, well, he said, oh, no, he said, it's not much. He said, but if I was to put a notice on the gate too, when wouldn't, he said, outside, he said, there'd be thousands out there, and there would, because there was 3 million people out of work.
Yeah.
But I wasn't prepared to work for nothing. You see, because the time I got, I could get, what I got on the labour, 28 bob, was more than I had cleared out the time I was paying fares and that, going up there, out there, two guineas. It's only £2.02. So that's how I was chucking it out. He's sorry to leave me, he's sorry to lose you, he said, but I had the job waking up all right, don't remember that. But so that's why I picked that up. And of course, out of there, it went from one thing to another. I had building again, more buildings. And I got a job down at Sir Johnson's. When a war broke out, well, they had to keep you down there. Like, well, I was too old, probably 37. Then, but they were advertising for PT instructors and army instructor drill. Well, I could do it all, but like stopping the tone here. But it was my wife Amy. She couldn't be left. She was in bed when they had dropping upstairs in bed when they had flying buzz bombs and all that flying around. I worked down
she
at.
She got steadily worse over the years, didn't she?
What?
She got steadily worse with her heart over the years.
Yes, of course. She couldn't walk at the finish. She was in and out of hospital.
She was in bed right essentially all the time.
Yeah, well, she was in and out of hospital. I made the dugout in the garden. It was her and Ronnie and mother and father Sutton and Millie. Remember Millie? You didn't see her, did you?
I think
you came up, Millie and Ronnie. And
I remember Ronnie.
Kids, Johnny and Alan and Amy. Well, I'll get down in all, but I've used the outside of Mr. Foster.